Take a marine safety course, and if you're going kayaking or canoeing, know how to get out of your craft if it flips over. Practice basic safety moves such as wet exits and self-rescues. Save the alcohol for dry land after you're done playing on the water. And never go out alone. For more information and more safety tips, go to lifesaving.bc.ca.
Giving for chances to leave the basement life.
Oh, Howdy, folks. We're the Bitterweed Draw, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Good up Wednesdays 3 to 4.
I mean, I just wanted to do a nice experimental music radio show and maybe throw in some
just feeling like you're talking that anonymous.
A private body sense in your podcast.
I mean, I think I can talk, and that's good enough.
Fight or flight music
sometimes
for things that are not alright.
I just
radio essays and travesties, radio catechisms, half-baked philosophy and criticism, experimental beat music, avant-garde, post-punk, industrial, noise, ad nauseum. Cue it up.
Again, welcome back to the Community Living Show. We're here with Daniel Wu. Daniel, are you there? I know he messaged me that he can hear me, but I cannot hear him. Daniel, are you there? Hello? Okay, we're going to have to go back to the music again.
SEC.ca. AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Daniel, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I'm going to see if we can go online now. Okay? Okay, we're back on air again. We had some technical difficulties with the phone for one reason or another. I could hear, Daniel could hear me, but I could not hear him. So, good morning, Daniel. Yeah. How's the day going for you?
The day is plugging along nicely. I'm wondering, okay, it's already, what, Thursday?
Yeah. It's hard to believe,
How'd
right?
How'd that happen?
So, Daniel, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, you know, being an artist and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, born and raised in Vancouver, lived my entire life in South Vancouver. I went through a number of very traumatic situations, and I wound up turning to art therapy as my method of escape. And as people who are creative would know, anytime you get into something artistic, you can absolutely get lost in time, and it's absolutely beautiful. So oftentimes I would spend 2, 3, 4 hours easily working on my canvas, which my medium of preference was chalk pastel. So it was absolutely beautiful. From chalk pastel, I think it was one of my high school counselors told me I should be using my artistic abilities as a tool for career. So I got into the 2-year jewelry art and design program at Vancouver Community College, and that was really interesting. In the end, I used that. I did jewelry design for several years. And after a while, I eventually turned back to my original creative roots of pastel illustration. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but when I finally showed you my portfolio contents, you tore a strip off me for not sharing my portfolio with you earlier.
Well, it's because you showed really great talent, and there was obvious emotion in the work and everything else. Something that people would literally be able to enjoy, right?
Yes, I think it was one of the few paintings that I did where I use a special technique that makes it look like there are clouds on the paper, and you absolutely adore that one.
Yes. That one, and you had another one that was, I think you recently sold this one, the fog shot.
Yeah, the fog shot. Because my father got my brothers and I into salmon fishing very, very young, and my father passed at a young age, and I saw a picture on a recreational magazine, and I just thought, well, see if I can emulate that. It was early morning shot where a man was standing on the middle of an open boat, and there was a misty fog on the water, and I just thought, well, how would I make that happen? How could I make that seem the same? The same reflection, the same fog, just enveloping, almost enveloping the boat, but you can still see the boat transparently. And it worked. So
yeah. It was a great feel to that particular painting.
And it was the first time I'd ever tried using that technique.
Yeah. So, I know also that that while you're promoting your own art, you help others.
Yes, I'm one of the few artists that got into business and marketing. Most artists are keen on just their canvas, whatever that may be. It would be airbrushing or photography or a clay wheel, whatever it might be. But most artists are focused on just honing and developing their portfolio, not getting out there, approaching people about where to showcase, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I just have a very curious mind.
Yeah. So how do you find like the right venues for the right artists?
Well, it's a matter of finding the right match. Some people are keen on showcasing special items in their personal homes, or maybe looking for a special piece for family friend or to decorate their office. Mm-hmm. It all depends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess the other more into that, how easy it is. You have an artist who really doesn't know a lot about business. How do you coax him through the whole business process so that he turns his artwork into something that he can make a living out of?
Well, most artists, at first blush, they think to themselves, if I get showcased front and center in a major prominent gallery, I would be so happy. And then I explained to them, well, it would be great to get showcased in a gallery, yes, but if your works sell, you're not going to make a whole lot. And that's because most galleries, especially in our area, charge over 75% because they have the overhead. And when you're talking about only getting a 25% commission, you're not going to be able to make a living unless you're selling piece after piece after piece after piece at multiple galleries. Mm-hmm. And most artists don't have it in their portfolio contents to be able to do that. So we found a way for artists to maintain their full commission while the end buyer gets what they're looking for as well.
So exactly how does that work?
Trade secret, my friend.
Trade secret. So
trade secret.
So essentially what you're saying is artists that go through your system, they retain almost 100% of what the item sells for?
They retain all of what the item sells for. They also maintain intellectual copyright.
That's pretty exciting for a lot of artists. Art, music, and
creative writing,
all that sort of thing is like usually the corporation is the one that winds up with everything. So instead of then the artist more or less becomes a pawn for greed. You know, that's pretty amazing that you found a way to actually do that for artists so that they can keep that their copyrights, their royalties and everything, right?
Yes, we wanted to set up a platform so that it's a win-win situation for everyone, and it took a lot of tweaking, but I think it's working. Things are falling into place, and people are generating interest, not just for whatever artistic medium you might have, writing, music, animation, live theater, motion picture, whatever have you.
Wow. So movies.
Yeah.
Is there any particular movie that you've promoted so far?
I've been involved with a friend who is also a Vancouverite. He's based in White Rock. Just as his story is real life situation, he was an art teacher in the prison system about 20 years ago, witnessed a prison riot which put his life in harm's way, and the movie is about how he made his way out of that situation, being chased by the mob, and how he got out of that situation safely.
Mm-hmm. That sounds quite the story.
Yes, it's combination action, drama, metaphysical, all of it under the same in the same film.
Yeah. So, movies cost money. Some art is like, okay, I can go to an art store and get supplies and things like that, and maybe even just use whatever credit card I have in my pocket. A movie's completely different from that. It takes like millions of dollars to build a movie. From what I understand, how do you help these artists not only find funds for how do you help them find funds to one shoot the movie and then maybe even promote the movie? How does all that work?
Well, we have I'm on one side of the company as a retired jewelry designer. I can draw fine and I can paint with pastels. Aside from that, you're part of the company being the videographer and artistic photographer, and together we shoot and develop the campaign for crowdfunding. And from there, we've generated traction from, say, internationally. We have interest with British Broadcasting Corporation. They say, well, we got invited to showcase them. They said, well, if you put, say, $25,000 in the bank, we'll put you in the Cannes Film Festival, we'll look at that and see what other methods of distribution that we can help you with. Mm-hmm. So crowdfunding, set up the video, generate the buzz in social media, get some attention, people step forward. This is how we showcase the story, really resonates with them, and I say, well, yeah, I'd back that.
Yeah. Social media is great for that, finding just people walking down the street that want to join in a program, right?
Yes, and one of the key things about the films that we're doing is zero or nominal CGI effects. People want real life. They want to see real. Mm. and that really resonates with people.
Yeah. Is it hard to get people to resonate with the stories that you're trying to tell with the crowdfunding?
Well, no, not especially difficult, because we seek to make the stories as personal as possible. And when you're talking about sharing a personal story, then you're going to attract attention, tug at heartstrings, and it's going to be much, much more interesting for the audience. As, oh, this is somebody's personal story. This is exactly what they went through. And they're not interested in sensationalizing it. It's just, okay, this is it. This is how we're, it's because what we're doing to start off is an independent film. It's not backed by, it's not a major Hollywood motion picture.
Mm-hmm. How much does that really go on, the over sensationalizing of stories and things like that, where Hollywood says, hey, this is a great start of the story, but we're going to twist it this way or that way to make it go?
Well, if it's an independent film, then you don't need to cave to Hollywood's pressures. That's the beauty of it. And as an independent film, you don't have that budget to make it things not the way they really were anyways, because you're limited in how many shots you can take.
Right. So you're listening to Community Haven Radio on the NCRA networks, and we're here on our flagship station for the Thursday one-hour show, CITR 100.9. And we're here talking to Daniel Wu about promoting artists, different types of artists. Right now we were speaking a little bit about movie makers, the filmmakers, who are independent of the big corporations. So, somebody has an idea for a film. What are some of the steps that they're going to need to take in order to turn that idea into a film, and then maybe see some return in their own pockets, so that, you know, people get to know who they are and all that kind of stuff too?
Well, first you're going to need to develop and sharpen your screenplay. Then you're going to need to talk to an entertainment lawyer about intellectual copyrights, make sure that your story doesn't conflict with something that's too similar to what's already out there, so you don't get sued. Then you have to go through the channels, the people that you're going to, the crew that you're going to need for the film. As the film gets bigger, you're going to need to hire someone for communications coordinator. You're going to need to hire someone for helping with the videography. You need the technologies available. And some people aren't really tech savvy, so you have to align yourself with people that are experts on computers, using text messaging or WhatsApp and Skype, and especially if you're not used to using social media to promote. So there's a lot to be considered, but it's a very, very unique and fun process.
How do you keep the stress down on that sort of thing, so that it stays a fun process?
Oh, it's you only do it when, because it's a fun process. If you have there's going to be stress in all situations, but it's how you. How you view and perceive the stress. You could say, well, I can't handle this, it's too much for me, blah, blah, blah. Or you can spin that attitude and say, you know what? It's falling into place. My dream is happening. This is exactly what I want. This is exactly what I've been dreaming about. Mm-hmm. It's finally becoming reality. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many people do you have come to you looking for different types of movies?
Let's see, we've got one, two local in traditional ones, documentary type ones. I actually don't know if it's documentary, animation, and two motion pictures. And that's what we're working on so far. And you can't do too many, otherwise you get spread too thin, unless you have a team to really help you leverage things. But we don't have that big crew yet. Although we're getting interested with a lot of people that say, well, we are interested in what you're doing. And because it's local, yeah, this is really cool. Staying within the Vancouver area, this is really cool.
So a lot of people doing this kind of work are outside of Vancouver?
That's what we've encountered so far. We haven't enveloped ourselves in this arena before. So we've been going at this for, 6-7 months, and we've got a lot of interest for collaboration and people who might be interested in having us help them with their projects.
Hmm. Wow. It sounds like you're really getting a foothold into the art and film. What about books and all that sort of, you mentioned it. So what about
yes,
the books?
One of our collaborators, part of our crew has many years as a freelance writer doing articles for American companies, and he's developed a template for ebooks, whether it be Kindle or Kobo. All you do is take out all your content you've written on a Word document, and you can copy, paste, dump it into the template, and boom, it automatically becomes the format on Kindle or Kobo.
Wow. That's pretty. Because I know usually you have to hire some consultant or something like that to format things for you for all the electronic readers and things like that, right? Because each one of them has a slightly different format too, right?
Yes, exactly. And he's also developing formats for corporate handouts, like for presentation folders, et cetera. So all it is that format, the template, and we're able to help make and change the different industries is really, really fun.
It really sounds exciting. I'm not a writer, and how do you get the coach a person through? They want to tell the story. Maybe the story needs to be told for some sort of healing process, whatever. How do you coax them through and actually get the book from in their head into a document to begin with?
Well, it all starts with the author. How passionate are they about getting their book out of their head and onto paper and get it distributed? If they're just at the seed stage where they haven't really got the passion for getting it done yet, it's not really the right time. But if they've been talking about it, and their friends tell them, you've been talking about it for long enough, get it done. Mm-hmm. That could be the final nudger or push, or in my case, the shove that I needed. And from there, I spoke with a lot of possible coaches and wound up working with a publishing coach, authorship coach, and we're getting aligned to have a lot of collaboration with her.
Yeah. So what is your book going to be about?
My book is, my book commemorates over 25 years, end-stage kidney failure caused by lupus, which for those who are not familiar, lupus is fundamentally, it's the opposite of AIDS. Your immune system goes haywire and it turns against you and tries to kill you. So essentially, it's like, okay, normally I'd be going day to day doing different things and my immune system would be dealing with whatever cold virus, flu virus, if I get some sort of infection, your immune system handles it. Well, for me, I was diagnosed at a young age, and it's really weird when your immune system turns against you. So that's what my book is about, making my way through my 2.5-decade journey with end-stage kidney failure caused by lupus.
Wow. So, mm-hmm. Who would have thought that your own body's immune system could turn against you that way?
Oh, you know? It happens a lot, but most people don't mention it, and there's only 10% of lupus patients are male. So, and I know from doing research that there aren't too many male lupus patients that have done a memoir, and so it's time for me to get my story out, because I've been talking about writing it for many years. And finally, after 2-3 years of looking, I found the missing ingredient, which was the one picture that I permitted to be taken of myself when I was first in BC Children's Hospital on dialysis. So, yep, almost done.
Yeah, how old were you when you were on when you first put on dialysis?
I was 15. I was about 3.5 months away from being eligible to get my permit to learn how to drive. So this was way back 1990.
So what kind of effect did that have on your life? You're a teenager and about to get your driver's license, and now you have to go, what is it, once every 3 days for dialysis?
Oh, I was shut in Children's Hospital for about 2 months. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, start at 8 a.m., end at noon, and after each dialysis session, my blood chemistry was so drastically altered. Go back to my hospital room, and I switch off, and I nap for another 3 hours, easy. So, yep, it was a huge change. Keep in mind, there was no such thing as the internet or cellular phones back then, so the social interactions weren't there. Is after dialysis and dealing with lupus, you don't have the energy. You can have maybe when you're in flare, forget it. You're not talking to anyone. You don't have the energy or the strength.
Yeah.
And so because of which I became estranged from everything that I was used to being around and the people that I was used to interacting with.
Wow. So yep. I guess it affected social life, school life, everything, huh?
Mm-hmm. My relationships simultaneously collapsed. Mm-hmm. So it was hard.
But you've turned that around and you've become a successful entrepreneur. So how does one go from that to being a success?
Well, the whole thing is most people are taught to go out, get an education, get a job, and they'll be fine. They don't learn about the power of leverage. So even when it's a shift to learn about, okay, well, I got to do my job. And when really all I did was shift to say, okay, well, how can I use my benefits, what I know how to do, and help others to maximize and make for a win-win-win situation? Because that's what it's got to be. Win-win-win situation for all parties. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting that you say it's a win-win-win situation, because most people only expect it to be a win-win. And where does that third win come from?
That would be for a win for yourself. Got to be a win for a client. Got to be a win for whoever else you're collaborating with. Mm-hmm. The expert on whatever subject. So it's going to be a win for multiple parties, yourself, possibly 2-3 other parties.
Right.
So as long as everybody's in a win situation, it makes people think win, win, win. Like, yeah, it makes people curious. Like, okay, huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does make people curious, is like because they think that only the just the two people sitting at just two of the people sitting at the table should be the winners, but they don't think that there's another third party involved. In some cases, it could be like the consumer, right?
Yes. So unfortunately, you can go even thinking even smaller and say, well, I only care if I know what's in it for me. It's like, well, no, that's not how I think. If you're thinking that small, then it's not going to resonate with very, very many people.
Right.
It's about more about attitude than anything else.
Right.
Cause,
I can see that.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Most people refer to it as thinking outside the box. But for me, I'm like, what box? Seriously, what box?
Oh, so you're saying we don't even need the box, right?
Exactly. So when you're creative, it's like, well, what box? We look at it like, okay, how about if we la-di-da-di-da? What would it look like if we did blah, blah, blah? That's all. Yeah.
So, I guess the other question, because I've followed like Robert Kiyosaki and Donald Trump and some others that are big in the business like that, and when asked, or actually prodded just the right way, you find out that they've had like numerous failed businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most businesses, especially when they're young, don't work. They fail after 2 to 5 years. So it's a matter of connecting with people who have a track record of being successful and building million-dollar companies, seeing what they did, how they did it, what works, what doesn't work, and using them as a mentor. Some people say, well, no, I'm too busy doing my own business. And you just can say, well, yeah, that's great. Wouldn't it be great to find someone who's done it before and can help guide you to make sure you don't make mistakes that they did?
Well, isn't it kind of counterintuitive that you want to keep all of your ducks to yourself and not look for like, say, outside business mentorship because they could take your ideas?
Yeah, that could be a risk, but only if you share information that you don't need to on a time that's not necessary. Mm-hmm. You also have to form an agreement that it's a non-disclosure agreement. And if you're going to be collaborating with someone, then do your due diligence on them and make sure that they operate above board anyways. Otherwise, you're making a mistake right away.
Right. Yeah. I know that some of the advice that Robert Kiyosaki gave, since I followed him, he said that they have to be legal, moral, and ethical. Mm-hmm. If they don't match all those standards, then you probably shouldn't be working with them.
Exactly.
So, you advise people to actually dig into what other people have done before actually working with them?
Yeah, so the first thing, before even talking about business, I talk to people and get to know them as people, as an individual. Learn about what their goals are, what makes them tick, the thought that comes with their method of operations and how they do things. Mm-hmm. Because if you know where a person's coming from, you can get a better understanding of who they are, their level of integrity.
I see. So we want to build the integrity straight into the business from just the start.
Yes, well, if a project isn't on or above board, not going to happen.
So, How many businesses have you run?
Let me see here. Have I been a part of or have I run? In direct sales, there's been about 8 or 9. Outside of direct sales, there's been about 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. My claim to fame is in business is helping a local Vancouver company that was in the tech arena. It was competed with the Yellow Pages. It's like an online business directory, but there's only $1 a day fee and no monthly contract, and I helped to take that company from, I think it was $100,000 in valuation to $1.1 million in about 11 months. That was fun.
How did you manage to change the valuation of the business so quickly?
Oh, we had a crew and we saw things the same way. We approached large congregations of where business managers and business owners met and just handed them a free trial of what we could do for them. And from there, I was like, oh, this is going to cost me how much? $1 a day for all this? Sign me up. I'm in.
It does sound pretty exciting because advertising can become quite costly. You're a really good example of how someone who had their health kicked around some, and still managed to maintain a positive attitude, and adapted, overcame, and has become successful. At least not only here in Vancouver, but in Canada, right?
I suppose so. I think a large portion of it is you eventually have to develop and use humor. Because if you're not going to use humor throughout the day, then you're going to find yourself down in the dumps.
That sounds like good advice for anyone.
Yep.
Regardless of disability or not, right? The humor.
Yes, because of what I've been through, or some of what I've been through, I have people telling me that I have a demented or deranged sense of humor, and I say, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, that already sounds a little strange and demented.
Yeah, so like, one wouldn't be able to go through my life without having and developing a strange sense of humor. It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I can imagine being a teenager and strapped to a hospital. That when you want to get out and I know my high school years were filled with baseball and track, right?
Okay.
And you know, I don't want to say normal, but that's what most kids experience, right?
Yes. I think for myself, I was a late bloomer. When I did grow physically, I grew about 1.5 feet in less than 2 years. My bones grew, my muscle systems did not, because of which I was bullied for my lack of physical stature. So towards the end of my growing, it was then that I was hospitalized with lupus, and the treatment was cortical steroids. And immediately people think, oh, steroids? Okay, well, how big are my muscles going to get? Well, for me, that was opposite case, because with the cortical steroids, there was a side effect for me. It caused severe muscle wastage. So that, to me, is like I couldn't help but laugh at that, but I had the irony of it. So I spent about 2.5 years about being teased for my lack of muscle stature. Like, okay, this is defying irony. And yes, I many times was laughing at myself on the inside.
Hmm.
Yep.
So, since it's coming to the top of the hour and near the end of the show, we've got about maybe 7 minutes left here. Let's get to... One, what is some of the best advice that you give somebody with or without disabilities, how to get started with their own business and attract people to their business?
Well, first and foremost, if you're going to get into business, do something that you absolutely love and have unwavered passion for. Because if you're not absolutely passionately in love with the business, it's going to become a hobby to you. And when it becomes a hobby, you're going to do it when you feel like it, not regardless of time and circumstances. So without the passion, without the love of what you're doing for business, forget it. That's the key thing. Everything else is going to fall into place. You're going to find the right people that share synergies with you. But everything has a foundation of having love and passion for your business.
Wow. Love and passion, that just doesn't sound business-like. So, with that, what is the best way somebody could find you if they want to help with their business, their artwork, or maybe just some mentorship?
Well, they can always connect with me through yourself.
Okay. So if you send an email to communitylivingradio@gmail.com and you put business help in the topic line, we will forward the emails over to Daniel so you can connect with him. So
great. That works for me.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you, Daniel. I hope you have a good morning, and I hope that movie comes out well. And
oh, it will.
So, and thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. This is great.
Okay. So you have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. You Bye. Too. Cheers, everyone.
All right. So anyway, that was Daniel Wu, and he helps a lot of artists with art marketing and things like that to help them turn their artwork and their passions into a valid business. He's a really awesome person to know. So if you really do want to be in touch with him and turn your artwork into a business, please do send us the email to communitylivingradio@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, Community Living Radio. Connect with us there. So, you know, the idea here is to inspire people to do good works and enjoy life. So, disabled or not, we all need to learn to enjoy life. So anyway, that's about it for us today. Thank you for listening to us today on the NCRA network and here at CITR UBC Radio 101.9.